Windsor is scrambling to repair its image and reputation after a series of very public missteps. The association between one of the most prolific abusers in history and the heir to the throne is a serious blow.
As Queen Elizabeth scales back on her public duties, Prince Charles must now try and convince an uncertain public the crown will be safe in his hands. On this evidence, at least, the jury is out. Amina Taylor, London.
Just days after a UN-backed truce came into force in Yemen, fears have risen over the implementation of the agreement, with key promises regarding commercial flights being allowed to enter Sana'a's international airport failing to materialize so far. At the time of the UN announcement, senior Yemeni officials warned onlookers to remain cautious about raising their hopes prematurely. Despite the warning, many Yemenis have already become excited for an end to the war.
The truce is wonderful for us and the region in general, a great thing, and we hope that the truce will last not only for 2 months, but rather permanently, because the people are tired and they have suffered a lot.
Yemenis have faced their fair share of disappointment over the years in regards to peace efforts. Multiple nationwide ceasefires have all failed, and the 2018 peace talks hosted by Sweden also failed to produce an end to the conflict. However, experts still believe the flights will begin soon.
The truce is holding very well. Reports of violations do not amount to breaking the truce. It's the usual standard violations that take place in similar situations. The Saudis have been trying to get out of this quagmire for a long time. And the big major conference in Riyadh is their way to initiate the exit out of the Yemen conflict. So I'm very hopeful that this will lead to some major break in the Yemeni conflict.
This truce, which the United Nations is already celebrating, could turn into a curse rather than a blessing for millions of Yemenis if key pledges regarding the siege are not upheld. In particular, so many will be hoping that they can finally get into Yemen to visit their besieged loved ones. If that turns out not to be the case, then it would be another additional heartbreak on top of the many already broken hearts which have been caused by this devastating conflict. Robert Carter, London.
A Turkish court has suspended Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi's trial in absentia of 26 Saudi nationalists accused of murdering the man inside the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. The Turkish justice minister said a red notice had been issued for 26 suspects. 20 of them were asked to be extradited to Turkey. However, the court's request was rejected, and Saudi Arabia demanded the case be transferred to Riyadh.
A red notice was issued for 26 suspects, and 20 of them were asked to be extradited to Turkey. But all our requests were rejected. Saudi Arabia later demanded the transfer of this case. Now the government recommended the court to close the trial in absentia and transfer the case to Saudi Arabia. However, the trial would continue in Saudi Arabia, and Turkey will wait to see convictions and sentences before dropping its own case.
The case will be transferred to Saudi Arabia. However, it is seen by many as if it will be closed. Saudi officials say the case is already closed and those involved were convicted. Khashoggi's fiancée Hatice Cenkiz, however, said she would appeal the decision, speaking to reporters in front of the courthouse.
Turkey is not ruled by a family like in Saudi Arabia. We have a justice system that addresses citizens' grievances. We will appeal the decision in line with our legal system.
Many believe the change in Turkey's stance is due to Ankara's bid to restore its relations with countries in the region.
After 4 years of not reaching its purpose and due to the suspects not being extradited to Turkey, to stand in front of the judge, it seems appropriate for Turkey to transfer the case to Saudi Arabia. However, the timing here serves Turkey for sure. It comes ahead of an expected visit by Turkish president to the kingdom, and as Turkey is restoring its relations with countries in the region such as United Arab Emirates and Israel.
Turkish officials had previously said that Khashoggi, who is a known critic of MBS, was killed and dismembered inside the Saudi consulate in an operation approved by highest levels in the kingdom. Khashoggi's trial intensified the friction between Ankara and Riyadh, but it seems President Erdogan is looking for a warm welcome during his upcoming visit to the kingdom. Rahşan Saglam, Istanbul.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
An investigation has found a British charity, Thinking Autism, promoted unproven autism treatments in testimonials on its website and directed families to clinicians linked to Andrew Wakefield, a British anti-vaccine activist, former physician and discredited academic who was struck off the medical register for his involvement in the Lancet MMR autism fraud. We've prepared for you an article written by Shanti Das. The piece is titled, Revealed, Autism Charity Chief Has Links to Anti-Vaccine Movement in UK. The article has been published by the British newspaper The Guardian. A British autism charity that received hundreds of thousands of pounds in national lottery funding has links to the anti-vaccine movement and is being jointly run by a campaigner who likened the COVID-19 jab rollout to a Nazi war crime. An investigation has found Thinking Autism also promoted unproven autism treatments in testimonials on its website and directed families to clinicians linked to Andrew Wakefield, a British anti-vaccine activist, a former physician and discredited academic who was struck off the medical register for his involvement in the Lancet MMR autism fraud. The Charity Commission said it had opened a case into the charity and was assessing evidence passed to it by The Guardian. It comes 7 years after a campaigner claims she first raised concerns about Thinking Autism with a regulator and National Lottery Community Fund. Awarded charity status in 2006, Thinking Autism claims to change lives by providing hope, emotional support, and practical information to autistic people and their families, and has received £389,750 from the Lottery Fund since 2015. It is jointly run by Joanne Allman, a vocal COVID sceptic who last year stood as a local election candidate in Sefton, Merseyside, for the Freedom Alliance, a campaigning political party born out of the pandemic to resist attacks on medical freedom and body autonomy. On social media, Joanne Allman, described in records as a trustee, treasurer and director of Thinking Autism, dismissed the Omicron variant in a post on Facebook in November of 2021, and last month reshared a post on Twitter calling the vaccine rollout a reckless, dangerous, insane experiment. In other posts, Joanne Allman said PCR testing was a fraud underlying the greatest hoax in medical history, and tweeted that people the world over were being coerced into having an experimental vaccine. Alongside a picture of the Nuremberg trials held after the Second World War to bring Nazi war criminals to justice, she wrote, "How long will we have to wait before those who are complicit in tyranny are brought to justice for crimes against humanity?" While those posts were from Joanne Ullmann's personal accounts, campaigners expressed safeguarding concerns for vulnerable families seeking help from Thinking Autism, which hosts conferences, online events, and runs a private Facebook group. The charity itself has publicly been largely quiet on COVID-related issues, aside from announcing its opposition to vaccine passports. But it has a history of promoting misinformation dating back to at least 2014, when it shared a video in support of research by Andrew Wakefield, who was struck off the medical register for a discredited study claiming vaccines were linked to autism. Its website, meanwhile, carries testimonials for unproven autism treatments, including homeopathy and cease therapy, a pseudoscientific approach that claims to remove supposed toxic effects from outside sources, including vaccines. Campaigner Emma Dalmain, who runs Autistic Inclusive Meets, a non-profit organization that advocates for autistic people, said she first reported concerns about the charity's promotion of unproven treatments to the Charity Commission and the National Lottery Community Fund back in 2015. She questioned why it was still operating 7 years later. She said, "The Charity Commission is potentially putting vulnerable children at risk by lending credibility to organizations like Thinking Autism." Michael Marshall, project director at the Good Thinking Society, which campaigns against pseudoscience, said, "It was extremely troubling to see people linked to the charity trying to undermine efforts to curb the spread of COVID-19. Michael Marshall added, "If they cannot understand the importance of public health measures and cannot refrain from baseless scaremongering about vaccines, they should not be in a position where their misinformed opinions may put children in harm's way." Meanwhile, Thinking Autism has said members of the charity were free to hold their own views and that it endorsed the rights of autistic people and their families to speak about their healthcare experiences. It said it heard from hundreds of families each year thanking it for its support. It said the charity does not endorse any specific view except that people with autism who are suffering from healthcare problems deserve appropriate investigations and treatments. "Because healthcare is an individual and personal choice, and because we're not medical professionals but rather parent volunteers, we're explicitly clear on our website and social media that information we provide should not be construed as medical advice." Joanne Ullmann said the posts were made from her personal social media accounts and did not make references to autism. She said, "My personal opinions on COVID-related issues have no bearing on my role as a director and trustee of Thinking Autism." The Charity Commission said it had opened a compliance case relating to concerns raised about Thinking Autism, including the charity's use of social media, and was currently engaging with the trustees. It said it had no record of a 2015 complaint. The National Lottery Committee Fund, which allocates money raised by the lottery to community groups and charities, said its funding relationship with Thinking Autism reached its conclusion in 2020. In relation to the 2015 complaint, the National Lottery Community Fund said, "We looked into it and were satisfied that the funding was being used in line with the agreed proposal."
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
The French presidential election in 2022 is here, and the results so far show a downturn in the participation rate, around 65%, down sharply from the same point back in the year 2017 when elections took place. The obvious question, why do French voters feel that they should not come out and vote like before, especially during uncertain economic times? In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at Emmanuel Macron, the current president's five-year report card, and why the contender Marine Le Pen actually has gained in popularity. And we will also take a look at the Muslim vote and why Macron may have lost that demographic. First, let's get an idea about some of the results that have come out from our correspondent, Rami Mazari, who joins us from Paris to tell us about that. Rami, at this point, we know that some initial results have trickled in. Tell us about that and, of course, any developments there that you have.
Very, very close race between incumbent Emmanuel Macron and the 2017 runner-up, Marine Le Pen. The Macron with 28%, Le Pen with 23%. A distant third, well, not a distant third, but Jean-Luc Mélenchon, the leftist, he scored 20%. That's a real failure. It's the exact same score that he got back in 2017. It really shows the failure of the French left to really sort of do anything. You had four out of the top five candidates be far right, and that's the way that it ended. Eric Zemmour, a very, very repugnant, convicted racist, and they seemingly handed the campaign agenda to him for months, from from the fall until Ukraine. It was all the disgusting Islamophobia and xenophobia coming out of his mouth, and everybody just sort of following him in the mainstream media. And that's this explains why there was such high abstention. People don't really care about Islamophobia. It's not new here in France. It's not 2007. Running fourth was Valérie Sarkozy's candidate. But she didn't even get the endorsement of Sarkozy. I won't go on and on. I will note that Jean Lassalle got 3%. He is the only person who wore a yellow vest in the French Parliament. They immediately suspended Parliament and they fined him 1,500 euros. Good to see him getting 3%. And then at the bottom, I'll point out the Socialist Party is totally smashed. She got just 2%, and then the two communist parties, they got less than 1% each. They are both Trotskyists, meaning that they disavow the Soviet Union and Cuba and basically every sort of working, and China and any sort of working socialist state. What they have already pivoted to, we have heard it behind me. We're supposed to all get behind, together, Macron to fight Marine Le Pen. The problem is that it's 2022. We've seen Macron's record. He legalized the state of emergency, which targeted Muslims, hurt them the most. He passed the anti-separatist law, which tried to get minors to not wear the hijab. He failed there, but he succeeded in neutering the rights of many other Muslim rights, freedom of assembly, freedom of religious worship, various political freedoms. And I just, I think it's going to really come down to now with what's going on now. It's not Islamophobia. This is not 2017. We have the, Trump president. Marine Le Pen is really not so shocking. And now, most of all, Macron was elected in 2017 to sweep out the mainstream. He is the mainstream. And he was elected because the mainstream parties were so corrupt. He set the record for ministers who had to quit for corruption just only 2.5 years into his term. So how are voters going to view him? There's a very, very, very interesting poll set just this week. 7 out of 10 French people want Macron to leave office. So that's really certainly very, very telling. The fact that we are at a dead heat now really should force us to look over at Hungary, where Marine Le Pen's counterpart, her right nationalist counterpart, he had very, very close polls, and then he had a very, 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 very large victory. I think personally we are headed in that same direction. Why?
because it's not 2017. People aren't so scared of Marine Le Pen, and especially Muslims know. We all know that Emmanuel Macron is an Islamophobe. He's not a centrist. He's had 5 years. I've already, what he got away with in terms of Muslim oppression and also in terms of the oppression of the yellow vest,
right.
Marine Le Pen would have never, ever really gotten away with. So it's going to come down to pocketbooks, and that's Ukraine. I think many people are going to say that Marine Le Pen cares more about France, Macron cares more about the U.S. and Brussels, and I think we really could be headed towards a Marine Le Pen victory, but we'll have to wait and see.
Thank you so much for that. Ramin Mazari there from Paris. Let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. Jeff Brown, radio host and journalist, joins us from Normandy. Also joining us, Arnold August, an author and journalist who joins us from Montreal.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Jeff Brown, let me first start with you. So we're looking at a turnout that's 4 percentage points lower than at the same stage that occurred back in 2017. At the same time, based on the initial results, Macron seen at 29.5%, Le Pen 23.5%. Your initial reaction to that?
Well, this is exactly what happened in 2017, and my wife and I voted in that election, and we voted in the election today. And the problem is that the press is totally controlled by the elites, and what's going to happen now in round two is that they will totally demonize Le Pen and call her a fascist, radical, racist, extremist, to push the people towards Macron. And in 2017, and before the first round, they made her look like she was an angel and a princess and a wonderful lady. And no, she's not that bad and she's not that radical, because they did not want Mélenchon to get into the final round, because I think he's the only candidate that might have any chance of beating Macron. So here we are again, the left with seven parties, all splintered. If all of those parties had backed Mélenchon, Mélenchon would be going against Macron in the second round.
Why didn't they? And
I think he could beat him.
Why do you think they didn't? At this point, do we have any who have endorsed either?
Well, the left in France has always been highly splintered. We've got you've got communists and workers' party, and then the socialists, ecologists. Two or three different communist parties, and there's a lot of infighting, a lot of jealousy, a lot of the left here has been talking forever about a unified left, and the last time that happened, Mitterrand got elected, and that has not happened since.
Okay, Arnold August, looking over here, moving to the second round with obviously Macron and Le Pen, if you haven't heard. Let's break this down a little bit and first talk about whichever you like. Let's pick Le Pen. What do you think of Le Pen? She's being described, as our guest there said back in 2017, of being an extremist and so forth and so on, but now she has portrayed and been successful in portraying herself as somewhat more moderate, and that obviously was to allay any concerns that the voters may have. Do you agree with that? What are your views on Le Pen?
Well, of course, yeah, she is definitely, and this is always the case in these type of elections, such as in France or United States or Canada, people on the right try to shift change their appearance to be, more moderate in order to try to get some more votes. But one thing is very interesting, talking about trying to be more moderate, is that she actually visited Moscow, I think, in 2017, and she came back saying that she had a high regard for President Putin. Of course, now Macron is fighting against that, saying, showing pictures of her in Moscow and trying to denigrate her with regards to the international affairs of being soft on Russia. So, you know, it's a shift. It's a mixed ground. I mean, there is no clear way that one could describe Le Pen at this time, because everything is shifting according to circumstances, with the one and only goal, trying to get votes.
When we take a look at the way that you said, Jeff Brown, that the media controls the way that these contenders and the incumbent is portrayed, perhaps showing the pluses and minuses, what is the real story, do you think? For example, we had our correspondent when he spoke to us saying that 7 out of 10 voters actually support Macron, but we're not seeing that at the polls. Or support Le Pen? Is that how? What is the deal? I mean, who has more popularity here?
Before every election, everyone who's registered to vote here receives a packet of information with the platform for all, and there were 12 candidates, mind you, which is too many. That's part of the problem with the French electoral system. And when you read Le Pen's platform, I don't think she's radical at all. She is definitely much more liberal than any Republican.
Give us one point that stands out.
Well, one point, she has a very socialist-minded, in terms of the 99% medical care, taking care of the people, providing, public services, et cetera. In fact, her economic advisor came from the Socialist Party. The only thing that she gets demonized here for is because she's the daughter of Mr. Le Pen, who was overtly racist. Le Pen is just against immigration, but that is not an unpopular platform around the world. And so, I mean, to be honest with you, other than the fact that she's against immigration, she's as far as I'm concerned, she's as much on the left as some of the other left-wing candidates. So the problem is the press is going to absolutely push her, or they're going to destroy her in the next 2 weeks, because we have to wait 2 weeks for the second round on the 24th. They will destroy her, and the other thing is Macron is, he's not middle of the road. He's a neoliberal right winger. He's a very neoliberal. World Economic Forum, Council on Foreign Relations. He is more right wing than Le Pen, but the press will make sure that that's not how it's portrayed, and that's the big problem here. Is the mass media, what I call the big lie propaganda machine, is what it decides who gets elected, unfortunately.
So let's put that into perspective, if we can, or if you can, Arnold August. We know that Marine Le Pen, one of the platforms that she ran on is the fact that she wants to somehow focus on the cost of living crisis and be able to tame that. Of course, we know that that's a huge problem for the French. Now, Macron, on the other hand, I'm not too sure how well he has done. They're touting a 7% GDP growth, but then when you take a look at the real figures, you can see that the deficit is still high. You're having a manufacturer base in France that's gone out of business. They're not doing that well. And also, we're looking at one of the worst inflations when it comes to energy. So who stands better? Who can fare better under those circumstances, you think?
Well, I think that, you know, describing these specific programs of these two candidates, I don't think that it has very much currency or very much legitimacy amongst the population. Here in Montreal, there's a large number of French citizens, of course, who are voting today. And speaking briefly with them over the last few days, their frustration is, how come? I mean, the previous speaker talked about the role of the media. It's very important. And I think the most important feature of the media in these elections is they focus solely on Le Pen and Macron, as if these are the only two candidates that count, that have a chance of winning. So it's like a vicious circle. They avoid talking about Mélenchon, and they concentrate on the other two, making it like a sure bet that there's no chance for Mélenchon can win, and one only the other two can win. Now, as far as I know, Mélenchon has a 11% rating amongst the voters. In other words, it's quite important. And I, you know, speaking to my friends here in Montreal who are voting, they're very disappointed that this time the Communist Party of France did not sit it out as they did previously and openly support Mélenchon. And if they would have done that, I think we would be in a different situation now, far more solid, with chances very much improved for Mélenchon to actually get into that second round. And I think that if one look at his general program internationally and nationally, it is very good. It's a solid left-wing program. There's no real reason why the Communist Party of France did not drop their own, you know, sectarian, if I may use the word, interests and goals, and in support, put all their backing in support of Mélenchon. He's a very dynamic person. And the fact that the media are just ignoring him, we may be in for some kind of a surprise, because the voter turnout is so low. It is mainly because people have no confidence in the two main candidates and their programs, which more often than not seem to be just, well, platitudes to try to get votes. Is sure. Very obvious. And we could actually have a surprise this Sunday with regards to Mélenchon. Let us see.
Well, we need to talk about the economy a little bit more here, Jeff Brown. And I'm looking at comments made back in 2017, because I had a record of that. And one of them said, you can't make it to the end of the month. This is just one of the French protesters, which we'll talk about where he was protesting. You can't make it to the end of the month, even with two salaries. Looking at some of the comments now made by some of the French, they're still struggling to make ends meet. So what has Macron done? And we're looking again at the voter focus, which is during this post, if I can call it that, post-COVID era, whether the French government under Macron can handle what's coming its way, as opposed to Le Pen.
Well, since 2017, Macron, you have to understand that Macron is a neoliberal Trojan horse. He is a Rothschild regent. He was cultivated by the Rothschild family, Goldman Sachs. He is an elitist and has absolutely no concern whatsoever for the common man. In fact, he's going to give his speech tonight at Versailles, you know, where Louis, where, you know, Louis the 14th was, you know. But the problem is that, I mean, everything has gone south since the European Treaty in 2007. Salaries are going nowhere. Inflation's going up. Social services for the 99% are being slashed. Since Macron got elected in 2017, just one example, 17,000 hospital beds have been shut down. Taxes have been raised on the 99%. Taxes have been lowered on the 1%. Austerity has been increased on the 99%. Austerity doesn't exist for the 1%. That's why the yellow vests have been out there for the last 3 years, and Rahman Mazahiri has done a brilliant job. They express the frustration, and we live here. A year ago, we bought 1,000 liters of heating oil for 777 euros. We just paid 1,966 euros for that same 1,000 liters of heating oil. So it's a disaster. I mean, he is a disaster, but he is a disaster for the 99%. He is a dream come true for Washington, the Council on Foreign Relations, the World Economic Forum, the CIA. He is their man. And right. But you turn on the French television, and you don't see this, you don't hear it. The yellow vests are invisible. That guy you quoted never sees the light of day except on press TV and other alternative websites. So it is just propaganda, 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 and the big lie propaganda machine makes sure that the 1% candidate gets in, and that's happened with Sarkozy and Hollande, and now with Macron, and he will get in for the second in the second round.
Well, Arnold August, how can that be turned around? A and B, do you think the French will be able to see through that, based on what our guest there from Normandy said? Because obviously, inflation, whether it's energy, food prices, basic goods, is going through the roof in many cases.
Well, I have to be an optimistic guy this morning. And, you know, France has its revolutionary traditions going back several centuries. And they have stood up to a lot of the neoliberal policies that have been going on in France over the last few years. I have hope that Mélenchon will, after all, be able to get into the second round. That's what I'm hoping for. And the people I'm speaking here in Montreal are hoping for that as well. But the basic thing, the headlines are the voter turnout is down. One. Why? They don't say so. But the voter turnout is down because all the emphasis are on those two, you know, one, as the previous speaker said, the two 1% candidates who are not like the vast majority. So will their political consciousness be sharp enough, rebellious enough to make a break from the status quo, focus only on those two 1% candidates, and make a move to try to get Mélenchon into the second round, which I still think is possible.
I'm going to now end it with a quote. I'm stuck between Le Pen and Macron. I'm going to go with Le Pen. If I can ask you, Jeff Brown, this is what she has said in her campaign trail. The presidential election day is a very important day because, considering the situation of the country and the world, it will determine the course of not only the next 5 years, but also possibly the next 50 years. Do you agree with her?
It may be a little bit hyperbolic, but yeah, this is an important time for France and an important election. She lost 34% to 66% in 2017, and my wife and I voted for her in the second round because we knew that Macron was a train wreck to kill the working people in the 99%. I think Macron is still going to win, but the margin will be less. But he will, unfortunately, sadly, is still going to win.
Okay, we're going to have to end it there. Thank you, Jeff Brown, radio host and journalist from Normandy. Arnold August, a pleasure, author and journalist there from Montreal. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Tapley, it's goodbye. Until next time.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
In the U.S., despite concluding that it has enough evidence, the January 6th House panel is concerned that making a referral to the Justice Department would backfire by politicizing the investigation into the Capitol riot. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalists Michael Schmidt, Luke Broadwater, and Maggie Haberman. The piece is titled, January 6th Panel Has Evidence for Criminal Referral of Trump, but Splits on Sending. The leaders of the House committee investigating the Capitol attack have grown divided over whether to make a criminal referral to the Justice Department of former President Donald J. Trump, even though they have concluded that they have enough evidence to do so, people involved in the discussions have said. The debate centers on whether making a referral, a largely symbolic act, would backfire by politically tainting the Justice Department's expanding investigation into the 6th of January assault and what led up to it. Since last summer, a team of former federal prosecutors working for the committee has focused on documenting the attack and the preceding efforts by Donald Trump and his allies to reverse his defeat in the 2020 presidential election. The panel plans to issue a detailed report of its findings, but in recent months it has regularly signaled that it was also weighing a criminal referral that would pressure Attorney General Merrick Garland to open a criminal investigation into former President Donald J. Trump. Despite concluding that they have enough evidence to refer Mr. Trump for obstructing a congressional proceeding and conspiring to defraud the American people, some on the committee are questioning whether there is any need to make a referral to the Justice Department. The Justice Department appears to be ramping up a wide-ranging investigation, and making a referral could saddle a criminal case with further partisan baggage at a time when Donald Trump is openly flirting with running again in 2024. The committee's vice chairwoman, Representative Liz Cheney, said on CNN on Sunday, 10th of April, that the committee had not reached a final decision about making referrals and downplayed any divisions on the committee, but acknowledged there was significant evidence of criminality. I think that it is absolutely the case. It is absolutely clear that what President Trump was doing, what a number of people around him were doing, that they knew it was unlawful. They did it anyway, said Liz Cheney, a Wyoming Republican. The shift in committee leaders' perspective on making a referral was prompted in part by a ruling 2 weeks ago by Judge David Carter of the Federal District Court for Central California, deciding a civil case in which the committee had sought access to more than 100 emails written by John Eastman, a lawyer who advised Donald Trump on efforts to derail certification of the Electoral College outcome. Judge David Carter found that it was more likely than not that Mr. Trump and Mr. Eastman had committed federal crimes. The ruling led some committee and staff members to argue that even though they felt they had amassed enough evidence to justify calling for a prosecution, the judge's decision would carry far greater weight with Merrick Garland, Attorney General Merrick Garland, than any referral letter they could write, according to people with knowledge of their conversations. The members and aides who were reluctant to support a referral contended that making one would create the appearance that Merrick Garland was investigating Donald Trump at the behest of a Democratic Congress, and that if the committee could avoid that perception, it should do so. Even if the final report does not include a specific referral letter to Attorney General Merrick Garland, the findings would still provide federal prosecutors with the evidence the committee uncovered, including some that has not yet become public, that could be used as a roadmap for any prosecution, the people said. If you read his decision, I think it's quite telling, Representative Zoe Lofgren, Democrat of California and a member of the House panel, said of Judge David Carter's ruling. Zoe Lofgren added, he and we have reviewed a huge amount of documents and he reached a conclusion that he outlined in very stark terms. Zoe Lofgren is among those who believe a referral letter to the Justice Department is superfluous, since it would carry no legal weight. Maybe we will, maybe we won't, she said of a referral. It doesn't have a legal impact. But the question about whether to send a referral has, for one of the first times since the committee was formed in July, exposed differences among the committee's members. Representative Elaine Luria, Democrat of Virginia and a member of the House panel, said that the committee should still send a referral for any crimes it uncovers. It would say that I don't agree with what some of my colleagues have said about this, Ms. Luria said on MSNBC this month. I think it's a lot more important to do what's right than it is to worry about the political ramifications. This committee, our purpose is legislative and oversight, but if in the course of our investigation we find that criminal activity has occurred, I think it's our responsibility to refer that to the U.S. Justice Department. Liz Cheney portrayed any divisions as minor and said the panel would work collaboratively and reach a consensus agreement. I'm confident we will work to come to an agreement, she said. Although staff members have been in discussion about a referral and some have debated the matter publicly, the committee members have not sat down together to discuss whether to proceed with a referral, several lawmakers have said. Representative Pete Aguilar, Democrat of California, said the committee was likely to hold off on making a final determination until investigators finished their work. He said the House panel was finishing up its investigative phase and shifting to a more public-facing one in which the panel will present its findings. The members haven't had those conversations, Mr. Aguilar said, of a meeting to discuss a potential referral. Right now, we're gathering the material that we need. As the investigative phase winds down, we'll have more conversations about what the report looks like, but we're not presupposing whether that's going to go before we get a little further with the interviews. Although the committee has the ability to subpoena testimony and documents and make referrals to the U.S. Justice Department for prosecutions, it has no criminal prosecution powers of its own. Liz Cheney singled out Donald Trump's conduct at a public hearing in December, reading from the criminal code and laying out how she believed he had obstructed Congress. In early March, the committee in effect road-tested whether the evidence it had gathered could support a prosecution, laying out in a filing in the civil case before Judge David Carter its position that Donald Trump and John Eastman had obstructed Congress and defrauded the American public. In validating the committee's position, legal experts said the judge made it difficult for the U.S. Justice Department to avoid an investigation. Attorney General Merrick Garland has given no public indication of the department's intentions other than to say that it will follow the facts and the law. But subpoenas issued by a federal grand jury indicate that prosecutors are gathering information about a wide array of issues, including about efforts to obstruct the election certification by people in the Trump White House and in Congress. Investigators from the House Committee and the U.S. Justice Department have not been sharing information, except to avoid conflicts around the scheduling of certain witnesses. We want them to move faster, but we respect their work, Mr. Aguilar, Democrat of California, said, adding that the committee has a different goal than that the Justice Department's inquiry. To fully investigate what led to the riot, which injured more than 150 police officers, and take legislative steps to prevent a repeat. It's an insult to the lives of the Capitol Police officers if we don't pursue what happened and take meaningful and concrete steps to ensure that it doesn't happen again. Aside from the question of whether to make a referral about Donald Trump, the committee has moved aggressively to use the Justice Department to ensure that witnesses cooperate with its investigation. The committee has met criminal referrals against four Trump White House officials for their refusal to sit for questioning or hand over documents, accusing them of contempt of Congress. But the Justice Department has charged only one individual, Steve Bannon, frustrating the committee. Those frustrations played out in public at a hearing this month when Zoe Lofgren said this committee is doing its job. The Department of Justice needs to do theirs. Ms. Lofgren said she had not planned to make the remarks, but as she sat on the days during the hearing, she decided to veer from her planned remarks because the department's slowness in addressing the contempt referrals ate at her. Some of us did express some frustration. I'm among them, she said. Honestly, I hadn't planned to say that. It wasn't my script. It wasn't there, but I thought, you know, this is frustrating. I just decided to say it. Trying to pressure the Justice Department to prosecute a contempt of Congress charge is more appropriate than other criminal referrals, Zoe Lofgren argued. It's different than doing a referral generally for prosecution, she said. When you're the victim of a crime, there is some weight to that. And when you are the victim of a criminal contempt, as the committee is, you're the victim. And so I think there was some stature to that. The committee is preparing to hold public hearings in May and June and to make a final report this September. After interviewing more than 800 witnesses, including more than a dozen Trump White House officials, the panel has another 100 interviews lined up, including some witnesses it wants to bring in a second time. Among those scheduled to testify soon is Stephen Miller, a former White House advisor to Donald Trump, who the committee says helped spread false claims of voter fraud in the election and encouraged state legislatures to appoint alternate slates of electors in an effort to invalidate Joseph R. Biden Jr.'s election victory.